not to say that Luka doesn't benefit at all also, but like, I think LeBron benefits from it more. And if the Lakers can find a way to, and this is what I talk about when it comes to like not needing to load manage as much if you're LeBron, but if they can find a way to get LeBron in motion and get him the ball while he is moving, that makes him as dynamic a player at 41 as he was when he was 34, in my opinion. That it just changes so much of what he could possibly do there, because more often than not, he's going to be facing a mismatch because the other team's best defender is going to be focused on Luka. And then if you give that, if you give him that mismatch and he gets the ball with some momentum going one way or the other, and you have him facing, very importantly, a defense in motion, that just, you use the term a lot, putting defenses in a blender. That just, you know, really gets it going and puts them in that blender sooner. So what do you think of, you know, getting LeBron in motion, the ways to do so? Do you think this is a possibility, or do you think at 41, he'll be kind of more focused on being a little bit more stationary just to get through 82?
Yeah, I think the motion will be limited, but I think there is still value to it and ways to do it. The simplest is starting him out in the corner. Like, one of the simplest things we do is just a little down screen. He's great at taking that three while moving from the right corner to the right wing and moving to his left and taking that shot. And then he's got a ball screen opportunity off of that if he wants. He's got a post up opportunity if they switch it, right? That, you know, if you have your big setting that, he can go out on the perimeter and isolate against them. So I do think that there's variety within that, whether that's in the middle of the floor or not. One thing that I keep thinking about more and more, though, is I think the offense especially is going to have a different personality relative to what group we're talking about. So with LeBron specifically, like how LeBron plays in the starting lineup alongside Luka, alongside Austin, alongside Ayton, I think the answer to that's a little bit different than, say, the non-Luka minutes at the beginning of the second quarter, which is usually where LeBron will start the beginning of the second and the beginning of the fourth, and usually Austin's in that group. It's funny, lately I've been thinking of, like, I want Ayton in the LeBron group for offensive reasons, right? Basically, like, Ayton will start, and then he'll probably be with either Luka or LeBron.
I think Jackson makes more sense with Luka.
You think so? Okay, yeah. So, but here's the thing is, yeah, it might be Jackson. But then who replaces Smart? Sorry, this is future Hook episodes as we get into the, there's sort of like kind of, you play a little bit of a game of whack-a-mole if you start planning out the rotation. We'll do this.
Oh, totally.
But
I think Vando replaces Smart, but go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. And so can you play Vando and Jackson at the same time, a ton of minutes? And does that mean like Kleba starts getting the minutes? I've like I always say, I'm not going to
involve Kleba in any rotation until I see him play his first game.
It can't be the plan. It also like can't be the, like, what are we doing here? You know, from a, I'd even say that about Jackson to a degree, you know, it's where like, it's like
when he played in the playoffs, that was literally what I was saying to my TV. What are we doing?
Yeah. And it's like,
what the fuck?
We can get to the trade deadline. No problem, I think, with Jackson. But just from a, what do we do when DeAndre Ayton isn't at the five spot, I think is a burning question even now. Right.
Yeah.
So anyhow, how LeBron operates on the offensive end in, say, those non-Luka groups, I think is a different calculus than it is with him. How do you view sort of incorporating that motion? Let's say Luka is on the court. You don't want him to be able to have the ball and cook and do what Luka does, but you don't want LeBron to just be the dude in the corner too. And I felt that last year there was a certain amount of your turn, my turn that I do think is inevitable, but how do you keep them from being sort of ships passing in the night and more integrated with each other?
Yeah, I think it's, well, for one thing, I want to be clear, your turn, my turn has its benefits too, because LeBron getting a turn and Luka getting a turn, those are good turns. Are
totally good things. It's more about like, okay, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. It's like, what is the other guy doing off of that? And sometimes it's going to be standing in the corner being like, damn, that guy's really good. There's going to be a lot of those plays, but like we want it to have some degree of incorporation where it's not just isolating against switches. Teams really hurt us with their switching that I feel like if they can solve the initial advantage creation versus a switch, solve that part, there's like a floodgates of offense to be where they could be really, really productive. So I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I, for some reason in my brain, I always have LeBron on the left side of the court and Luka on the right side, because I just think LeBron going to his strong side and being able to elevate off of his left foot, like the more often than I could get him, or at least have that be the threat, the better. It's funny, when I think of what those guys are going to be doing off of the ball, I envision LeBron starting in the corner, getting a screen that brings him up the court while Luka drives to kind of the elbow. Whereas I actually have Luka getting kind of fade screens where he's moving more towards the corner. He starts a little higher and moves towards the corner, moves more towards the sideline. Because I think Luka is a little bit more talented as a catch and shoot player than LeBron is. LeBron has a really interesting shot in that, like you can tell LeBron really has it going when he takes a right foot, left foot shot. And, you know, cause he really prefers to have his left foot set and swing that shoulder around and get his body squared to the basket that way. But when he really has it going, he goes right foot, left foot, and he just shoots it without hesitation. That's when I say, like, oh fuck, it's going to be a good LeBron game. You know, it's going to look good. Luka, I think, is more talented in the variety of shots he can take off of the catch. He can hop into his shots. He can hop out of his shots. He can shoot right foot, right foot. And as such, that's why I kind of envision him floating towards the corner, whereas I have LeBron coming more to the ball. And in more of a aggressive stance than Luka would be in more of a passive stance. But that's just very bare bones kind of a thing. The big thing is that, like, there is some motion on the backside there. The other thing too is it also depends on who's on that weak side with them. So you would typically have a pick and roll partner on the strong side with Luka. Whether that's Ayton or Hayes or whatever. But I actually really like the idea of LeBron occasionally going down and setting a screen for Austin coming up towards the ball and then occasionally darting to the basket as Luka.
You're good at steal.
Or a steal or whatever. And using some of Austin's gravity there too. And this is the funny thing, Pete. And actually, I'm glad that we're kind of arriving at this part of the conversation. Austin's a big part of this. Because for one thing, you know, I've been asking around, and one of the things that I've heard a little bit is that, like, Austin is really hammering catch and shoot this summer.
Great to hear. That's
that,
great
that
to
like
hear.
He's, you know, one of the things that he's kind of honed in on. And now I don't know if that is catch and shoot, you know, because like Laravia is a really good float catch and shoot player, but he's not great at like coming off of screens and stuff. I don't know if Austin is working as much coming off of screens or if
we don't need that. More.
Yeah.
He didn't need to take that shot. I have a rant about this, but yeah.
No, actually, I want to come back to it because I know what rant you're going to have. And I think it's a really important one. But with like Austin, if he and LeBron are on the weak side, I don't know how a defense completely commits to the strong side while those two guys are on the weak side. And that to me is kind of, and same goes for like if LeBron has the ball and it's Luka and Austin on the other side, or if it's LeBron and Austin on the strong side running two man together and it's Luka on the weak side. I don't know necessarily how teams would handle that either. So that to me is like that's like the next step of this is the involvement of Austin in all this stuff.
Isn't that, though, somewhat of the premise of last year of how they, like, Luka on one side of the court, LeBron on the other, and sort of it's a different way of applying gravity, right? It's not all concentrated on the strong side, but how does that differ from...
Oh, I like, see what you're asking.
You see what I'm saying? It's like, isn't that the same thing they did last year in a lot of ways, where it's like Luka on one side, LeBron on the other?
Yeah. So I think that would be part of the diet. I guess, you asked what LeBron and Luka look like together. I really like Luka as remember when the Lakers were occasionally running their offense with AD as kind of the fulcrum and there was a lot of handoff stuff off of AD.
Totally agree that handoffs are going to be a big deal this year. Yep.
Give me Luka with those handoff options where, you know, he catches the ball. The one thing Luka does really, really good and Lonzo was really good at this too, is as he's catching the ball, he's kind of looking at what's going on elsewhere. And if Luka is the guy who is kind of operating as that fulcrum and LeBron is coming to him to catch that handoff, I don't know how a defense doesn't overreact to that. And if you have a shooter in the corner on either corner there, Luka is super capable at whipping that pass to one corner or flipping that pass to the closer corner. Those are, I think that's kind of, that'll probably wind up being my favorite type of set with Luka and LeBron together. What do you think of, like, how would you run a pick and roll with those two guys though? Like, would you run it flatter? Would you run it more vertical? How would you run that?
I'd be looking to do more blur ghost screen type of stuff. Yeah. So a Ram screen is a screen the screener action, right? So one of the things that I'd like to see the Lakers do in that sort of situation. So let's say it's a three-man action with LeBron, Luka, and Ayton. And LeBron and Luka are interchangeable on this, but in this example, let's have Luka with the ball in like the right slot, LeBron in the left dunker spot, and Ayton coming to set a Ram screen for him. So he's looking to screen for LeBron, and LeBron's going to come up to set a screen for Luka.
Yep.
And these are the ghost blur screen types where LeBron can ghost it and fake it and pop out to the three-point line. And what this does is, I think a lot of the Lakers screening actions and handoffs are in this similar type of family. A lot of their best screening actions are going to come from behind. So say I'm guarding you, right? I'm guarding on the ball. The screen coming up at a flat angle from behind. And then at the last moment, you either slip it and you ghost it up out to the 3-point line, or you can set it left side, right side. But that sort of, if you're the defender, you're depending on your big behind you saying left, right, whatever you're calls are for that, and that can change in the last moment. And then you've got to worry about Luka's shifty ass like losing you. That helps him in the spacing as well, right? It also, if they want to switch that on the Ram screen end of things, Ayton can just reverse pivot, seal, I'm 3 feet away from the basket, give him a target, throw him a post entry, he's going to hit that jump hook,
right?
And so, but that in the Minnesota series, despite the result, they started discovering, I think, some things in that between their flex motion and then the handoff stuff that you were talking about. They were doing a lot more out of the stacks, for example, where one of the stack variations is you give the ball to the big or whoever the big was in that series, right? And then, like Austin, for example, you could give the ball to Ayton in a stack and have Austin as the low guy on a stack and him run off of the handoff, and he's so good at losing a guy, right, where, oh, you think I was going to keep going this way, but, you know, going to go behind my back, use his handles and whatnot, that those are, I think, for really across the team, I think a lot of ghost screen, blur screen, back screening type of concepts, I think, are really going to be a big part of what the Lakers do.
The screener thing is really exciting for a couple of reasons. Like you said, if they just try to switch, Ayton can just seal really, really quickly. And the great thing about LeBron and Luka operating in three-man game with Ayton is both of them are really tall, so they can just throw skip passes over the top of the defense. I think that's really important. But the second thing is here, and you talked about it a little earlier about, like, yeah, you can matchup hunt, but let's bring some motion into that. Well, if a team switches stuff and a center is going to be starting on Ayton, so if you screen the screener and they switch that initial one, now their center has to switch that initial Ram screen and then come up and navigate switching the Luka screen. And Gobert, I thought they made life a little too easy on Gobert, in that it was just like, all right, we're going to set the screen and then we're going to get the switch. And then Luka's going to stand there and dribble for a few seconds and let Gobert just kind of like situate himself. But if you force Gobert to switch that first screen, then come up and then switch the second screen, and if Luka attacks right off of that initial switch when he comes up, when Gobert or whatever the center is, whoever the center is, if Luka acts quickly on that second screen that LeBron would now be setting, good luck. To whatever center that is. I can think of one center that I think I would trust to handle that situation. He used to be a Laker, now he's a Maverick. But outside of him, I can't think of any centers really. Maybe Mobley would handle that situation pretty well. But you're talking about a very, very small number of centers who would handle that situation. The other part of this too, Pete, is I know LeBron and Luka love to operate with like, all right, take my time, take a look at the defense. And then, and you know, it's kind of like the stages of translating a language, right? Where you either don't speak it or you, you basically, you think of what you're going to say in English. You say it in the second language. You think of it, you translate it internally, and then you execute that sentence. And then same goes for like, when you hear that, you know, you hear somebody say something in Spanish, you got to translate it from Spanish to English, figure out what they said. And then it's just like a whole mess.
You got a 24 second shot clock too. It, you know, makes things hard. So.
But like when you're fully fluent, you know, like at one point in my life, I was fully fluent and I was dreaming in Spanish. And so like, you hear it and you're thinking in Spanish already. Mm-hmm. And LeBron and Luka have to think in Spanish here. Mm-hmm. They're very used to that second stage of translation, mm-hmm. where it's like, I can just look at the offense and pick them apart this way. But when you have somebody like, you know, if you're Luka with the ball and you have LeBron over there, or if you're LeBron with the ball and you have Luka over there, you make the other guy better by thinking in Spanish, by operating that much more quickly. And when you talk about that RAM screen or anything that involves LeBron and Luka, making quick decisions, and this is why I think it's really important that they've been in communication already this summer, so that when they hit training camp, if they have that pre-training camp, which I don't think they're going to have because Luka has the Slovenian like mm-hmm. Eurobasket, mm-hmm. But if they have that pre-training camp that they have had in years past, it'd be nice to have LeBron and Luka just get super focused on making those quick decisions off of each other, because I think that's a really underrated element to those guys working together.
I totally agree. I wonder who on this team, including them, really likes to and wants to run a lot, because you can think quickly, but somebody out there, especially if we're talking about all this motion stuff, the whole point is to get away from the defense, right? And this is not going to be, I think, a particularly fast Lakers team. I do think that the motion can help facilitate physical advantages. I see this team being most successful with their strength, and even Luka and LeBron, it's like quick decisions, but like physical strength being very much the star. For example, that Ayton sequence that we described, where it's like, good luck, you're buried, you know, it's, or you've got the center out on Luka in space, having to navigate two screens to get there. I'm just killing this mic stand. My God.
That microphone is really no. That it's microphone really, is what Gobert would do in that set.
That's you right. Just fall over. Just timber, right? So we're good. I think that like they're going to be a lot likelier to be more physical and stronger than other teams, than faster than them. So I do think that the quick decision making has to be accompanied by some of the other four guys or three guys on the court actually like running around and sprint to that screen and sprint to deep corner and cut hard. And so I think, you know, a guy like Rui, for example, is a character within this. Austin as well is more of an on-ball guy.
Rui's cutting is really going to matter.
And even on like the ghost screens and stuff, that was one of the things that they found success with in the latter part of the Minnesota series, was like pick and pops with Rui, doing the exact like ghost screen type of action, pop to the top of the key to go with Luka, he's wide open type of stuff. That type of off-ball player that's going to run and really commit to doing that, I think is important.
The Lakers short roll this season is going to be a weapon, has to be a weapon. Mm-hmm. Is that I thought that was one of the things that Rui did well in that Minnesota series, was handle that short roll. There was like a stretch there, and maybe it was the game that they won. I forget. Again, I haven't gone back and rewatched it because I just can't. But at one point they ran like a few possessions in a row of Rui in the short roll. And I think they went on a run.
It was the game four where they played the whole group, the 24 minutes in the six. It was the end of that third quarter. They went on a run and went up by 10. A lot of it was off of the Rui. Absolutely. So they've got some things. They've got some things in their bag that I'm excited they have a training camp and an off season to talk about it and game plan for it.
Yeah. Last thing, I know we said 45 minutes. I'm going to try to keep this to five, but the 2K ratings came out. Yeah. They're both in the top 10. Luka and LeBron are. I wrote about it in today's article that the Lakers are situating themselves for Giannis, for Jokic, potentially for whatever extra or other star becomes disenamored with their current situation. That said, you do have two pretty damn good players on your team right now.
Right now.
And also, you have Marcus Smart making less money than he has ever made, basically, in his like non-rookie skill career. You have DeAndre Ayton making far less money than he should probably be making. You have Austin before he gets his raise. You have, I think Rui's probably due for a little bit of a raise in his next contract as well. Like, I actually think the stars are pretty well aligned to go for it this year. And I know that the Lakers are kind of hesitant to move 31/32, whichever pick it is that they wind up moving, because they want that in the cash to be able to present for whatever star, you know, says, I'm sick of being here, also send me to the Lakers. But man, Pete, like, I don't know. No other team has two. And look, NBA 2K ratings and rankings and stuff like that, and player rankings in general, they exist in August to make us talk about the sport or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's fine if you want to poke holes in 2K rankings. I'm fine with that too. But fact is, I bet when ESPN comes out with their top 100, LeBron and Luka will both be in the top 10. I don't know where the Ringers or Bleacher Reports put theirs at or whatever. But anyway, the Lakers have two of the best players in the NBA right now. And I just think this presents them an opportunity that they kind of have to try to take advantage of. Does it, like, over the course of the summer, have you shifted your stance on going for it?
Big time. They added two. So between Ayton and Smart, I would estimate that's about 60 to 64 playoff minutes per game that they added for free in terms of not
assets.
Not giving up assets. And so that's starting caliber minutes for two guys that, in some ways, you know, I viewed this very much as a transition season. And in some ways, it's still going to be, right? Even you could throw the Mark Walter sale into that stew as well. But you put it there perfectly, man. It's like, you're not going to have Austin at this salary next year. You're not going to have Smart or Ayton. That if they opt into their player options, it means this season went very, very badly for them and for the Lakers, right? You've got several guys below market value that I do think there's an argument to be made that under the new CBA, that sort of guy who's looking for an opportunity post buyout, I actually think they were pretty clever in identifying a market where they could get 60 minutes worth of playoff rotation player that I think that might exist in the future too. So if it's not DeAndre Ayton at, you know, the $8.3 million, maybe it's some other really good player that just needs a chance. Something went sideways and here he is, right? So that said, like, you can't count on that. And you don't know if you're going to get Giannis or Jokic. Like, all of these are like low percentage probability type of things that they're going to work.
Ask the Warriors, man. They've been trying for Giannis for a decade.
For sure. I think the Lakers have a better chance at him than people realize, but I don't think it's like a 50% chance at him, right? Like, it's not a likely outcome. And so, I think that going for it this year, after adding 60 minutes worth of playoff talent, and you still have the 31 or 32 pick, you have expiring contracts, you know, you've got players, you know, you've got good players available on the market today. There was a report that, like, they can't find a trade partner for Malik Monk, who would be like, if we could have Malik Monk instead of Gabe Vincent, I would, you know, I wish we had more defense. But anyway, there's options. Lakers can make some moves from here that adding that talent for free really changed my perspective.
The first 20 games, I think, are really going to matter, because in that time, that's when those teams that have maybe thought to themselves, hey, maybe we have like a great season and we get to the play-in, you know,
then
like,
reality goes and slaps you around.
Portland, I'm thinking of you. But like, you know, I like those teams in those first 20 games, I think they'll hit reality. And that's when you get to mid-December. That's when more players become trade eligible. That's when trade rumors start swirling in more earnest. And I think that will be like, it's really important. And this, I think, is one of the better arguments for Rui to start at the beginning of the year, that you have that continuity and you can rack up wins with basically just swapping out Hayes for Ayton and then having a starting five that actually played really well together in the regular season last year. Maybe that's the argument there for Rui over Smart. I, I, I would still rather start Smart, to be completely honest. But yeah, I would just say that, like, if the Lakers, they have a really soft opening to the season, and if they rack up those wins, and if Portland, if Miami, if some of these other teams, Miami just salary dumped Haywood Highsmith, you know, like, I think the writing might be on the wall for the kind of season that they're getting ready for as well. So if enough of these teams have bad enough starts, and you start to have more of these conversations where, like, Wiggins doesn't cost a first rounder, maybe he costs Rui, but he doesn't cost also a first rounder, then, you know, I think we're in business. And I think that's where this season becomes, you know, quite a bit more interesting. I'm actually fine with not committing a first rounder to bring in a slight upgrade or even a decent upgrade this summer. I think that first rounder will extend quite a bit further as we get into the actual season. And then if I start hearing some of the names that could go for that first rounder, maybe then I'll get a little bit more frustrated with what decision they do or do not make. But I thought they handled this offseason really well. They have that optionality going into the season. And I think, to me, given this opportunity in front of them, they have to make good on that optionality. And they really, like, this to me is as good of an opportunity at a championship as you might ever get with Luka. And I don't think that's hyperlative. Like, I just think it's the reality. You have LeBron, who's still really bleeping good. You have a bunch of guys on well below market value contracts. You have Luka Doncic in the peak of his powers, basically, is where we're going to see him this year.
In great go shape.
Fucking go for it.
So. Hell yeah.
Pete, this has been a blast, as it always is. Anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, man. No, always fun doing these. Looking forward to the next one.
All right, everybody. I am off for the weekend. I'm heading down to New Orleans for a fantasy football draft. So that is going to do it for me this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I'll be back on Sunday to hop into the mailbag. I'll be right off of New Orleans, so I might be a little thick, but I'll be right here to answer those mailbag questions. Get them in the form of a 5-star review to iTunes. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. Follow Pete. Subscribe to the LFR pod as well. And until the next time you guys hear from me, have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you on Sunday. Thanks, Pete.
Bye, everyone.